various places in the canon where the Buddha talked about the middle path. And what's important to note, it's not that the path is on a middle of a continuum. It actually lies off the continuum. It's middle in the sense that it avoids the continuum that's defined by two extremes. Like in the first sermon, there's one extreme, he says, is indulgence in sensual pleasure, and the other extreme is indulgence in self-torture. And for most people, that's what the continuum is. Someplace along that line is where you're going to find yourself. Sometimes you're feeling pleasure, sometimes you're feeling pain. But we tend to run back and forth on that continuum. But with the middle path, the Buddha is actually asking us to get off that continuum. To use pleasure and use pain for something that avoids those extremes entirely. The use of pain, of course, is learning how to gain insight into the truth of suffering, the truth of stress. And the use of pleasure is the pleasure of concentration. Some people complain that the Buddha starts off with the Four Noble Truths, and there's a lot about suffering. There's very little about pleasure or happiness. Well, it's actually there in the Fourth Noble Truth, the last factor. Pleasure and rapture born of seclusion. Pleasure and rapture born of concentration. And the pleasure of the mind coming to equanimity. In other words, a kind of pleasure that has nothing to do with sensual pleasures. It's off the continuum. And it's a pleasure to be developed. The most important point of that first sermon, the most important part of the first sermon, is in a section that's often overlooked because it's so repetitive. Chakunabadi, yanangabadi, panyanabadi, vijanabadi, alokodabadi. That we chant over and over again. That's the actual wheel on the wheel of Dharma. Back at the time of the Buddha, a wheel meant listing a series of variables and then going down all the permutations. In this case, it's the Four Noble Truths. And each truth has three levels of knowledge. There's the knowledge of the truth itself, the knowledge of the duty or the task you have to do with regard to that truth, and then finally the knowledge that the task has been completed. So 4 times 3, 12. You've got 12 permutations. This knowledge of things as they've come to be with our three rounds and 12 permutations with regard to the Four Noble Truths. That's the wheel. And so the duty with regard to right concentration is to develop it. You want to work on it. It's not something you just watched arising and passing away. But it is a special kind of pleasure that comes with that concentration. Because part of what makes the concentration right is that it's endowed with all the other factors of the path, starting from right view on through right mindfulness. This is why the Buddha said that the concentration is developed not only by stressing the tranquility or the serenity of the mind, but also you have to use some insight in order to master it. As he once said, if you want to master right concentration, you should develop insight, you should develop tranquility. Because you have to understand the mind to be able to get it to settle down in the face of all the different currents that will push you in other directions. It is possible for the mind to get settled down without much insight in some circumstances, but if you really want to master it, it requires understanding the mind. Understanding what's going on in the body, understanding what's going on in the mind. Right concentration requires understanding if it's going to be really right. And of course, once the concentration gets more solid, it puts you in a better position to see things clearly as they've come to be. And to understand the process of fabrication. Because that's what insight is all about. As Buddha once said, if you're meditating, you've got to learn how to balance both tranquility and insight. And if you found yourself leading too far in one direction, you go to someone else who's skilled in the other direction and ask them. In other words, if you've been developing insight, analyzing things, but the mind can't really settle down, he says, go find someone who has mastered the ability to get the mind to settle down and ask them, how do you get it to settle down? How do you get it to indulge in its pleasure? So that you really do become settled in there, it really does feel like home. As for the person who's developed some tranquility, some serenity, but doesn't have much insight, you go to someone who's mastered the insight, and you ask them, how are fabrications to be viewed? How are they to be penetrated with discernment? Notice, it's the issue around fabrication that's important. Seeing how things get put together in the mind, seeing how things get put together in the body, how there is a shaping of cause and effect. So that you can understand, well, how is it that the mind creates suffering even though it wants to create pleasure? That's what you're looking for, is to penetrate that ignorance around this process of fabrication, because so many times we shape our experience without really realizing what we're doing. You look at dependent co-arising, and fabrication comes before contact at the senses. There's a lot going on already in the way you shape your experience of the body, the way you shape the dialogue going on in your mind, the way you shape states of mind themselves. That's already in play. And then contact comes at the senses, and it's going to be distorted or shaped, particularly shaped either for suffering, if the fabrication has been done with ignorance, or shaped into the path if you're doing the fabrication with knowledge. That's one of the reasons why we work on concentration, is because it's a way of understanding the process of fabrication. On the one hand, you look at the Buddha's instructions on breath meditation. After watching the breath for a while, seeing when it's long, seeing when it's short, the Buddha has you be sensitive to the whole body as you breathe in, sensitive to the whole body as you breathe out. One is a way of getting the mind to settle into the body. Then also you become more sensitive to how the breathing process shapes your experience of the body. That's what he calls Gaya Sankara, bodily fabrication. That's what the breath is. It fabricates the body. Your sense of the body sitting here. There's the in and out breath, but there are also the other subtle breath sensations that go through the body, connected with the in and out breath. And the more your awareness can spread to fill the whole body, all the way through the in breath, all the way through the out, the more you see that process of fabrication. Once you can see it, then the Buddha says the next step is to calm it. And what calms it? Sometimes it's a perception. Sometimes it's a direction in the mind. In other words, you don't just watch things arising and passing away. You play with them. You push them in one direction, then you push them in another direction. See what connects with what. Because that's the only way you're going to understand the process of fabrication, the process of causality. is by testing things. And here the test is, what can you do to calm the effect of the breath on the body? So there's a sense of ease, well-being. It feels like the breath currents throughout the body are all flowing together. They're not working at cross purposes. And the next step in breath meditation is to breathe in a way that induces a feeling of rapture, a feeling of ease. This is part of the calming. And again, this requires that you experiment. In what way can the breath induce rapture? Well, it turns out that the breath energy allows the body just to be still in different spots. It doesn't interfere with the other feelings of solidity or liquidity or warmth in the body. It allows them to be. They develop a sense of fullness. And then, as the Buddha says, you try to allow that sense of fullness to spread around. Notice where it goes easily, where it doesn't go easily. Or it doesn't go easily, figure out what's standing in the way. This is where you start exploring your sense of the body, what they call proprioception, body from the inside. And you begin to notice certain parts of the body are missing. Maybe your shoulder seems to be missing. Or your flank. Or your knees. In other words, you begin to realize that your sense of the body from within has become distorted because you've been paying attention to other things. And this is a good way of exploring that and healing it so you can get a greater sense of the whole body working together. And so you try to identify which parts of the body you're familiar with that are clear to you. If there's something, a big blank in the middle, or if things are distorted in the middle, well, see what happens. What way can you breathe to help it to settle out? How do you hold the body to help it straighten out? As you allow this sense of fullness to spread around. As you get one more in touch with how a sense of rapture, refreshment, a sense of ease, can be induced and maintained through the way you breathe. You'll find it's also induced and maintained by the way you perceive things. This is mental fabrication. And again, you watch the process of how these perceptions and feelings shape the mind. And how they can be calmed down. Okay, what kind of perception allows the mind to calm down and settle into the body and feel really good? So you've got concentration and insight, or tranquility and insight, working together. You're using your insight to bring tranquility to the mind. That's how vipassana and samatha, or insight and tranquility, work together. So what kind of perceptions help? Well, sometimes you can think of the body as being this big open sponge, so that when you breathe in, breath can come in and out from all directions. You think of the breath channels all connecting so that they can do all the work in getting the breath energy to the different parts of the body. You don't have to worry about breathing in and breathing out. You don't have to force the breath. You don't have to manage the breath so much. Just connect things up inside. As John Lee said, it's like putting electric wires. An area that hasn't had electricity before. Everything lights up. Everything is connected. Gets clearer. And it's easier to settle in. And at the same time, you've learned a lot about fabrication. how thoughts and perceptions have a fabricating influence on the mind, how the breath has a fabricating influence on your sense of the body. And you learn this not by just sitting there watching things arising and passing away, but steering them or training them in a particular direction. It's like learning to be a cook. If you want to learn about eggs, you don't just sit there and watch the egg. You do different things with it. You crack it open, you put it over the flame, put it over the fire, in a pan. And you see what happens if you turn the fire way up, and see what happens if you turn the fire way down. And that way you learn about eggs, because you want to make something with them. And as you get better and better at fixing the eggs, you have more energy and more interest in trying to figure out even more interesting things to do with the eggs. It's the same with the mind and the breath. You try to do interesting things with them, things that are energizing, things that are comfortable, things that can grab your interest. How is it possible to sit here, not worried about whether or not you're having sensual pleasures, but still having a sense of intense well-being inside? Because we're trying to get off that old continuum of rushing from pain to sensual pleasure. As the Buddha said, the reason we're so stuck on sensual pleasures is that we don't see any other alternative to pain. But here he's offering another alternative. A sense of well-being that fills the body, a sense of fullness can fill the body. That comes from understanding the process of fabrication. This is how tranquility and insight work together. You look at things in terms of fabrication, and then you try to master the process of fabrication and developing the path. And that way, at the same time, you learn how to comprehend stress, and you begin to see how you can begin to abandon the cause of stress and suffering. So that someday you'll fully complete the task and fully realize the cessation of suffering. These things all work together. The human mind tends to divide things up. We see, well, there's this factor and there's that factor, and we treat them as very separate things, but they all meld into one another. And it's important to see how they support one another, instead of treating them as radically different things. Because when they work together, they strengthen one another. And when the path comes together, it leads to release. Something that lies beyond fabrication, but can be attained only by understanding fabrication. And all the raw materials for understanding fabrication are right here. You've got the breath, you've got feelings, you've got perceptions, you've got the mind thinking about things and evaluating things. All right here. It's like one jewel, but with many facets. When the path comes together, it has those eight folds, but it's one path.